On this podcast, you'll find interviews with high-performing, successful individuals in life sciences. On a weekly basis, we cover their proven methods, principles, strategies, and mindsets to implement new technologies that scale to meet the needs of people in our world.
Welcome to this episode of Life Science Success. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Don. I'm a consultant in life sciences. We help companies with across our industry with things like mapping inefficiencies, planning and facilitating improvement events, and working through things like technology implementation and change management. And there are a lot of different activities that are going on with different organizations at this point in time. And I feel like there's just a real a lot of effort going on in our industry to really implement a lot of great technology to support the things that we do. And so with that, I wanted to hop over to our guest for today. So our guest is Jennifer Hawks Bland. She's a distinguished leader in life sciences and the chief executive officer of New York Bio, an organization at the forefront of advancing New York's life sciences ecosystem. So with that, welcome.
Thanks, Don. It's nice to be here with you this morning.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And, you know, I've spent a fair amount of time in New York with different organizations, like there's that wonderful Cure building right downtown. Yeah. With a lot of great activities going on. And also am active with one particular organization in New York. And I just feel like there's a great ecosystem for life sciences. So would you mind just taking a little bit of time and explaining a little bit about your history, first of all, because I looked at your journey into life sciences and I feel like, you know, that would be an interesting part of the story. And then secondly, you know, also who is New York Bio and what does it do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. So yes, my path isn't into life sciences, isn't like your typical scientist, because I am not. So everyone, when we talk about the science, I need it at the lawyer level, as I say. So I grew up on a farm. So who knew that one day I would be in life sciences? And I do think often, right, the routes we take are circuitous, mm-hmm. whether it's drug discovery, whether it's our own career pathways. And it's really been interesting to me. I started in life sciences because as a baby lawyer, I was randomly assigned to the pharmaceutical products defense litigation team. So, okay, so let that sink in for 1 second. I literally came out of law school and started at the firm, and they're like, you go here, you go here, you go here. I got to the pharma team. And wow. So I loved it. I loved defending. At that point, I was doing a lot of mass tort defense litigation around pharmaceutical products in Mississippi prior to tort reform. So there was plenty of work to go around, but it enabled me to learn some of the stories about how companies not only developed drugs, but what safety processes they used in that process, how they worked with clinical trials and what products were on the market. I fell in love with the idea of an industry that would seek to help people cure things or treat things that had happened to them that they've been diagnosed with. So it was totally eye-opening for me and not a place that I ever thought I would be or really even thought it would be a career path for me. But I couldn't get away from what I wanted to do, which was advocacy, right? Mm-hmm. So I shifted from being in a courtroom and telling a story to a jury to telling the story to elected officials. So I moved into lobbying and advocacy and worked in Washington, D.C. for a trade association that represented over-the-counter medicine, so the Consumer Healthcare Products Association. Most people that are going to listen to this interview or podcast know that many pharma companies also have or had OTC divisions, right? Over-the-counter divisions where they had consumer products. That is less common now as companies have divested and combined and formed new companies. But a number of years ago, it was very common for a pharma company to also have an OTC arm. And so I worked on those issues a lot, and then was recruited, as often happens, to go in-house with one of the member companies of the trade association. And I became a federal lobbyist for GlaxoSmithKline. And so, and then it was interesting. My work for GSK opened up the idea of really how you can use company executives to tell your story in Washington, right? Mm-hmm. And it really has shown me how important it is to be able to have the people that are doing the work, that are at the bench, that are making the business decisions, to be able to go to DC, or these days you can do it on Zoom with members of Congress, but to talk to them about the importance of their work and the importance of the patients that we're trying to serve. And then let's see. So after that, I started at Shearing Plow. It was interesting. Shearing Plow, the team called, and we were living in Atlanta at the time, and asked me to build a new state government affairs program. So I came to do that, and I had been at Shearing 10 weeks when the merger with Merck was announced. And so there's it's like last in, first out, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I was like, oh, okay, well, guess I'm done. But Merck asked me to stay, and I had a fantastic all-in 9.5 years working with Merck's government affairs and policy at the federal and state level, and left there to come to run New York Bio about 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I just feel like there are a lot of areas of the United States that get a lot of credit for a lot of life sciences activity. And whenever I think about New York, I don't know how many companies there, right, that are big pharma companies that are right in your backyard. And, you know, Regeneron comes to mind for me as one of them. But I mean, you probably know, even more that are right in that area.
Yeah, we do. It's interesting, right? Because New Jersey is, I think their tagline is, right, medicine chest to the world, which is legit. I fully acknowledge, right, that New Jersey is at the forefront of the pharma industry, or it has been certainly for years. But I think now we have Regeneron, Pfizer is headquartered. Technically, I think BMS may be headquartered in New York, even though they obviously have a lot of operations in Princeton. One thing that's been interesting to me is with New York, it's a region, right? Mm-hmm. So we collaborate across the region. You have folks that live in New York, work in New Jersey, live in New Jersey, work in New York, right? So it is very fungible, mm-hmm. As far as people. And that's actually been a fantastic thing for an early stage ecosystem. Because while we do have some very large, important companies that really contribute, right, to the health of the world that are headquartered here. Yesterday, I had a conversation, a fireside chat conversation in a patient advocacy summit that we did with Pfizer's global head of oncology, right? And so we have those resources, which are amazing, but we also have the human resources for early stage companies that are starting up in New York, that are spinning out of academia. We're really seeing this growth in entrepreneurial spirit, which is fantastic. And we're going to grow differently. I think every hub of sort of life sciences around the country grows out of what was planted there already.
Sure.
And for us, right, we have a few large companies, but what we're primarily seeing for the early stage companies, they are growing out of the academic medical centers, of which we have riches to work with here.
Absolutely. And I mean, I also sort of think about the entire East Coast as well, right? Because you have, yeah. I mean, there's a significant amount of activity that I know that's going on right now in New York. In addition to that activity, just south of you in Atlanta, which you mentioned not too long ago, there's another, sort of whole ecosystem for life sciences that's also happening that hasn't gotten, a huge amount of credit. But I just feel, again, like there's just this a flurry of activity and a lot of companies not just starting there, but also just building a significant base as well.
Yeah. And I'll put in a plug for my counterparts, right, across the country. So a number of states. Somebody's going to get mad at me when I get this wrong. I think we have 48 state biotech associations. And we, every one of them, right, has an amazing leader that works, and we work together, right, across the country on issues that are important to all of our companies. Yes, you have regional, local issues that are important, but a lot of policy issues are national in scope, right? And they're going to affect every company, no matter sort of where they're located, as long as they're doing business in the United States. And so all of those places you just mentioned have amazing leaders. And in fact, I gathered, I think there were 15 of us together at the beginning of January to ring the closing bell of the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, as a kickoff of kind of biotech month before we all headed out to California to JP Morgan. So, yeah, so we also we work collaboratively really well for our companies.
That's really, I mean, it's really good and important to know. I want to come back to you for just a second in terms of a little bit of your history. So in terms of the public policy work that you did beforehand, how has that influenced, you know, the things that you're doing now? How has it, you know, either shaped the way that you approach the role, or how has it either, you know, also helped how you help other companies, you know, come through this ecosystem?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One is litigation skills never go out of style. Especially my kids, my teenage kids will tell you that. Mm-hmm. But two, I think having come from industry, right, having been in member companies and deciding whether or not we had the P&L to afford the state association dues and whether or not they were productive and whether or not they were partners for us. When I was at in those pharma companies, it helps me understand what the value is and what those companies need from state associations. And so that gives me a unique perspective. Having also worked at a national trade association, it's a different, you know, it's a different lens. It was interesting when I was at Merck, due to requirements that were passed locally and then some state level around the country around the take back of unused medicines, we basically as a collective had to set up another trade association to handle, right, that work and that effort. And having had that experience then to get recruited to run New York Bio, I felt like I had sort of a unique understanding of what was beneficial. And so I've tried to take that and build into the work New York Bio does, right, the things that will be helpful to our member companies. And you have to remember that a trade association like ours, really, our members cover the ecosystem, right? So we have very early stage companies, you know, 1, 2, 3 member companies. We have large pharma and biotech companies. We have academic institutions, patient advocacy organizations, and then what I affectionately call the businesses that make the business of life science work, right? Which are consultants, accountants, law firms, right? So really our value proposition depends on where you sit in the ecosystem. Mm. And it's a little different for everybody. And some days that's fun. Some days it's challenging.
I was going to ask that very question, right? So if you were, let's say you're a founder and you're forming your company, are there things that New York Bio would help a founder do and kind of see early on to help them, you know, through that process?
Absolutely. So we work very, so as an initial, we work very closely with our economic development authorities, right? So in New York, it's the Empire State Development, which is our state economic development authority. And in the city, it is the New York City Economic Development Corporation, so NYCEDC. Those organizations are going to be the ones that we connect them to talk about tax breaks and payroll tax, right, and R&D tax credits and those things that are very specific to locating their business in New York. We don't do that, but we make the connection. And then we also have, we switched historically, I think we were one of the first associations, and this predates me, so I take no credit, but it was a great idea, to do a fellows program. And the fellows program originally was 2 years free membership, fewer than 7 employees, less than, I can't remember, maybe $5 million in funding, right? So very early stage. And what we realized were companies were using that because they were anxious to network within the community, but they were kind of using up their 2 free years before they really were ready to take advantage of like the savings programs and like lab savings with Avantor and, you know, office supplies and all those things. And so what we did was we revamped the program. We made it a 3-year program, but we now interview companies. So we actually talk with companies when they first come to us and get an assessment of like, okay, where are you? Are you ready to really take advantage of something that will save you money? Or are you still trying to raise your seed round and you're really not spending anything yet? You're just, you know. And so we have the opportunity now to almost in a small way partner with them to help them make a strategic decision about when sort of to engage in the ecosystem in as a member versus maybe someone, you know, just coming to our events and getting to know people as they try to raise the money to stand up their organization.
And then let's say that the company now matures, right? So they get to maybe a phase 3 clinical trial, or they're getting to, you know, a maturity point. Where does New York Bio kind of interact with them? But then also maybe let's also cover what the larger pharma companies, you know, might benefit from. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I mean, I truthfully thought that for the most part, that most of these associations, right, but by the time it got to big pharma, that the it was mostly talking to them about sponsorship and you know, seeing their name, you know, out amongst the groups that, you know, are being supported, you know, in large part to mature them. But it's just my lack of understanding, I think.
No, it's a fair question. So I think it's, you know, it's been interesting to me because I have seen there are so many parts of a pharma organization, and you have to recognize that. So the pharma business development and licensing department, they're going to want to meet those early stage companies, right? Because their job is to assess, you know, potential bolt-on, right, things for their pipeline and assets, right, that their companies may be interested in. The government affairs department is interested in working with multiple other companies, including trade associations, to advance policy goals or to fight bad policy. I feel like we spend more time fighting misguided policy, potential policy issues at the state and federal level. So I think that it really depends on what part of the pharma company, but we have a large number of large company members, and we work really closely with them to see what they need, right? And so the beauty of having the large and the small is the synergies when you have something that you can bring everybody together. And I'll give you an example. One thing, and to be fair, when I started, there was still some, I'll say, hand-wringing about New York will never be insert your biotech hub, right?
Sure.
So I won't pick. You can insert your, you know, your location within a city. And I said, okay, from a trade association perspective, what can we do that changes that narrative just a little bit, right? Just whatever space we have. And so one thing that I immediately thought of was, okay, New York is unequivocally capital markets. Right. And so we reached out and we ended up working with the New York Stock Exchange. And so we have a program that we've done. I think we've done 8 of these maybe and have more scheduled for this year. And we do a showcase at the New York Stock Exchange and we showcase companies that are sort of significant Series A plus. Right. So with, you know, within the striking distance of an IPO is very different now than it was 3 years ago.
Sure.
The timing is different. Put it this way. Lately, unfortunately, we haven't been rushing to get people into the showcase before they IPO'd. The runway is longer. But it's been great because we've been able to bring together the financial community, with public market investors, venture investors, business development people from the pharma companies, and these Series A plus companies. And we've actually been able to bring in companies from all over the country. And in fact, once during COVID, when we were still virtual, we did an all European showcase. And so we were able to do that. So like that is something that is no doubt New York, right? And so it's leaning in to the things that make us unique. And I'm still working on a Broadway event. I haven't figured that one out yet.
Well, I'll be there shortly, and you know we're planning on visiting Broadway, it'd be a great time to have one in the next couple of months. So,
yes, yeah. I'll get to work on it, Don, so that by the time you head this way, we'll have those discounted tickets ready.
Yeah, so I mean, as I think about your transition, your career transition, you shifting from kind of the legal practice into New York Bio, what sort of, you know, led you, I guess, in terms of your thought that, you know, hey, look, this would be a great move for me in terms of my career and where you're trying to go?
Yeah. So, I was tempted because, so at Merck for years, like we were in Atlanta, I was based out of DC or nationally. Right. So I kind of showed up wherever I needed to, you know, and some days that was in DC. For a while I commuted to DC. And while I loved my colleagues, I still do, that are there, and I love the work I was doing. It was, in fact, one time I had a conversation with Merck's former CEO, Ken Frazier, and he said, Jen, I bet you're going to go back to litigating. And I was like, why? Do I argue a lot? No. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I totally would. I would in a heartbeat, and my family knows this, I would totally litigate again. I loved it, but you can't control your schedule. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, as a parent of kids and wanting to do lots of other things besides, you know, just my work, I realized that I didn't want to do something where I was at trial for 6 weeks or whatever, right? So I'm thankful for those people that do it because it is very much needed. But I had to look elsewhere for my advocacy skills to stay sharp. And so the thought of being able to focus on a job that focused on a region. Now, granted, you know, like to get from here to Niagara Falls, and here for me is just north of New York City, so in Westchester. To get from New York City to Niagara Falls is not like, you know, like a 2-hour drive. So recognizing that New York in and of itself is very large, but still focusing on a region was really tempting. Plus, I recognized that New York as a whole in life sciences was at a real inflection point. We were having a lot of early stage companies starting up. We were having the real estate to support those companies coming online. And a number of developments have finished, or I don't know what the exact terminology is, but are online or ready for tenants over the past 5 years. And we're really seeing that pay off now. In that companies have space, right, to go into. Academic institutions are expanding their efforts in sort of life sciences. They're taking space. Early stage companies have more space. There is step out space for companies as they grow. Like you were saying, they grow. Now they're in a phase three. They're going to need a lot more people than when they were, you know, trying to de-risk and, you know, and get their IND filed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, the interesting part to me that I hear in your story, though, as well, is that the litigators that I know that have sort of transitioned, you know, anywhere else in the industry, they've sort of picked an area that has a significant challenge still. And I would imagine that, you know, inside of New York Bio, you have any number of, you know, things that you're trying to sort of help champion at different phases and things like that. And it's, you know, not an easy thing. And at the same time, you get to use some of your previous skills, you know, as well. When you think about the impact that New York Bio is trying to have, can you explain a little bit more of it, you know, the mission that you have and, you know, kind of the things that you're trying to deliver to the local ecosystem there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we serve as a connector, right, for the life sciences ecosystem, and we serve as a support. So we want to be able to connect people and companies in order to help them find the things they need to grow, right? And that takes different forms. Like I said, the value proposition of the organization is different. So the benefits take different forms. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, at the New York Genome Center, we hosted our patient engagement summit. And we had about 150 people in the room and a host more online. And we heard from, we heard panel discussions. But one thing that we've focused on is really elevating the voice of the patient in our discussions. And so while we had policy discussion panels, there was not a single panel or speaker that didn't have a patient or caregiver story, right? Mm-hmm. And so we really want to elevate and remind companies, that, especially our early stage companies, the earlier you engage the patient community, right, the more successful you'll be in your drug development and discovery. And so that was something that is helpful across, you know, it's helpful for pharma companies, it's helpful for patients and patient advocates to learn how to be better advocates, how to more effectively tell their story, right, in a policy setting. Because one thing that you have to remember is that when access to new innovative therapeutics is threatened, at the end of the day, it really is the patient voice that is going to make a difference with policymakers in order to ensure that those patients have access to the medicines they need. And so that so that's a good example of something that New York Bio does that wasn't being done before, right? And it's just a different way of bringing people together. And then, you know, we have, and then we bring in, we bring the financial community together with early stage companies. This year, we're going to do three series. We'll have networking events. We're doing a summit in June, and then we'll have a full day event at the New York Stock Exchange in December. So.
Oh, very good. I want to focus a little bit on you as we come to the conclusion here. So reflecting on your career, what's the greatest leadership advice that you've received?
I think the greatest leadership advice I received was probably one of my early jobs. I worked for U.S. Senator Thad Cochran right out of undergrad when I was a mere baby. And I'm not telling you how many years ago that was. and it was show up, raise your hand, don't be afraid to speak up, right? Mm. It is okay to ask questions. It is okay. You may not be right, but I was told from the beginning, and some of this may be slightly personality, that it's okay to speak up. It doesn't matter if you're young at the time, right? And so I always encourage people just to ask, right? Like there is no harm in asking the question, making your statement. And I think it opens up another avenue when you have, particularly when you have young teammates that do that, it opens up the conversation to continue and don't shut people down.
I feel like that, I mean, the importance in that as well, you know, and it kind of comes back to something that I would say that I've learned in over 200 interviews now on Life Science Success is that listening to the answer or the presentation or whatever it is that somebody's giving, I feel like you more intently, if you know that, you know, in the back of your mind that you want to engage, you know, in the conversation here and you want to learn as much as you possibly can from the individual that you have, then one of the greatest ways is to use your mind and sort of ask those questions. And I feel like it's great. That's great leadership advice. So thank you.
Yeah.
What inspires you?
The potential, right? Like the potential that I see when we talk with early stage companies, when they're working on things that it would have never occurred to me to work on, right? As a potential therapeutic or a new area or a new modality. I am blown away by the potential that exists to improve the health of the world. Just full stop.
And isn't it cool how the scientists, I mean, I just love how they come up with these crafty ways to do the things that they need to do. I mean, our biology is not always welcoming in terms of the treatments that they're wanting to give it. The COVID vaccine was a good example of that, you know, overall. And you know, just the amazing ways that they come up to, you know, with the potential for treatment is amazing. Yeah. What concerns you?
What concerns me are misguided policy proposals at the federal, the state level, particularly the Inflation Reduction Act. I'm worried about it drawing the consequences of drawing dollars away from early stage research or second indication in orphan drugs. And it is a real potential problem for an administration and a Congress that says they want to support innovation, and yet they pass things like the Inflation Reduction Act, which has the opposite effect.
Yeah, I mean, and we're in that situation now, right? I mean, we are in a situation where the reality is that a lot of companies are struggling, that a lot of companies with great science behind them are struggling, yes, to find base funding to do the things that they need to do to prove that, you know, this thing is, you know, could have a larger impact. And so, you know, we're seeing that now. I continually say to people, who knows what, you know, sort of, if we get 10 years out or 5 years out, all of a sudden we could look back and, you know, great innovations that were there aren't there anymore because they just don't have the, yeah, dollars to continue. And I know that there are a lot of founders that are sort of scraping together the dollars to, like, you know, just continue to carry things on until they can figure out, you know, what do they do in terms, right, of funding. So it is very, yeah, concerning right now.
It is, right. Because you also have, remember, while you do have a subset of investors that are specifically focused on life sciences and they will not, you know, deviate from that, you have other investors that come in, but if you have a situation where they don't think they can get a return, that money will not come into life sciences. It will follow a path that will generate a return.
Right. Yeah. And so I just feel like there is less and less outside funding coming in. And also, I mean, there are a significant amount of inside, you know, folks that would normally fund these innovations that are sort of holding off, trying to figure out what's going to happen,
yeah,
you know, in our environment, in the economy, et cetera. So, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, so that keeps me up. that's why we're working on some fixes, right? Some short-term fixes, the Orphan Drug Act fixes at the federal level. And looking at some other things, obviously, while there is on a whole separate track, right, an ongoing litigation again with the IRA. So, yeah, so we're doing our part at the federal level where we can. So
that's great to hear. Last question. What excites you?
What excites me, other than the fact that my high school seniors college process is hopefully coming to an end next week.
That's great.
Yes, all the decisions will be in by next week. No, what excites me is not only the potential, but also what I'm seeing in the New York ecosystem, more people engaging, more individuals wanting to engage, more entrepreneurs. I think that we have to have what I have coined this flywheel of talent. I think that has been slower to generate in New York because we haven't had as many C-suite people do life science, exit, do it again, right? That takes time. And I think we're starting to see that now. So I am really excited about the potential growth for our ecosystem. I think where our trajectory is headed up, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon. So everybody is welcome to come and join us in New York in the life sciences ecosystem.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And Jennifer, thanks a lot for being on the Life Science Success Podcast. I really appreciate you being here today and telling us about New York Bio and all the great things that are happening in your ecosystem and the great things that you're working on, you know, with and for the companies that are in your space as well.
Thanks, Don. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Life Science Success. For complete details about this podcast, including show notes, how to get in touch with guests, and more episodes, please visit www.lifesciencesuccess.com. If there's someone you'd like for us to invite to the show as a guest, please let me know by sending me a message at the podcast website. Please click subscribe on your favorite podcast app, share the podcast, or tell a friend about it, and last but not least, rate the podcast. Thank you again.